In its 250 years, St. Louis has given rise to a plethora of historic buildings and architectural history worthy of preserving. The Landmarks Association of St. Louis brings attention to buildings in the area that are crumbling, but they also highlight impressive feats of local preservation. Tomorrow, the organization will honor the best work in restoration and rehabilitation in the city. Last week, St. Louis On the Air producer Kelly Moffitt spent some time in South St. Louis getting a closer look at one of the year's award winners.
Just east of Broadway, in the patch neighborhood of Carondelet, stands a small, rough-cut stone house. Set back from the corner of Water and Stein Streets, a freshly poured walkway leads up to a shaded front porch on a sunny, 85-degree Friday afternoon in May. To be honest, the house looks a little out of place in this industrial neighborhood. It is nestled catty-corner from a nondescript packing company, near some very active train tracks, and set back from a boarded-up structure on its right. The 22-foot-wide and 18-foot-deep house was the childhood home of Marcia Dorsey. She lived on that property with her parents and Italian grandmother until the fourth grade. After the family moved away, the single-room house changed hands several times. It was during that time the property fell into disrepair, besieged by fire and the elements. Marcia and her husband Tim have spent the last 2.5 years rehabilitating the 160-year-old house. They call it Mia Noni's Casa, a nod to Marcia's ancestry. There are less than 50 such stone houses left in the St. Louis region today. Standing on the house's front porch on Friday, Marcia and Tim were joined by Andrew Weil, the executive director of the Landmarks Association of St. Louis. He offered this context behind why the house is receiving an award this year.
We're here today to celebrate the work that the Dorseys did on restoring this incredible stone cottage in Carondelet. There's a small but important collection of limestone, very old limestone buildings that survived down here in Carondelet. And this one of all of them was in by far the very worst condition. It really was borderline not even a building anymore and hadn't been for many years. It burned in the late 1970s, which we know from an architectural survey that our organization conducted at that time, inventorying these types of stone houses. And it gradually just became a complete shell. And it, because of its condition and how rare it was, an important piece of our architectural history it was, it made it onto our organization's most endangered list, which is a list that we use to call attention to important buildings in St. Louis City that are in danger of disappearing. It went onto the endangered list with really no hope in sight. It was just kind of like, hey, everybody, you should pay attention because there's this incredible building, but who knows what's ever going to happen with it. But I'm incredibly happy to say that this year it's going to be getting a most enhanced award from our organization, which is awards that we've been giving out for 21 years that celebrate excellence in historic rehabilitation in St. Louis. So it's one of the rare instances when a building makes the transition from the most endangered list to the most enhanced list, and we're here to celebrate that.
I noticed on the way over here, you know, we're driving through what is now a pretty industrial area. This looks like a building that has been here for centuries almost. It's of a different era. Now it looks like it doesn't fit in, but I get the feeling that at one time this was the predominant style.
Well, yeah, there were a lot of these buildings in Carondelet historically. There were a lot of quarries in this area, and of course this is a limestone building. Yeah, this area did become primarily industrial, but it has a deep, long industrial history as well. But in terms of the causal factors, you know, Carondelet is not right now a really hot, hip neighborhood. It's not getting the kind of reinvestment dollars and attention that, you know, some of our central corridor neighborhoods or our near south side or old north are getting. And so if you don't have a lot of demand for buildings in the areas, property values are suppressed, there isn't a whole lot of interest in redeveloping buildings. And if you can't get someone to redevelop a building that has a roof, you're certainly not going to get somebody to redevelop a building that doesn't have a roof or really even four functioning walls and a floor. So it was a bit of a hard sell, but it was really, it's an economics issue.
Now, Marcia, you have personal ties to this building, and I'm assuming that's part of the reason, you know, that brought your interest back here. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I grew up here, so I feel like it was always part of me. And, you know, when the shell just stood and stood and stood, I thought, well, something, you know, something needs to be done with this. And it was always, always in my heart that we'd be able to take the building over and bring it back.
And did you grow up on this specific property?
I did. And I lived with my noni, my Italian grandmother, and Romano and Nazarena Cogo. They were immigrants from Italy. And they lived in the front house, and the back house, this house, was used for their children as they were raising their young families. And when they moved on and everybody got their own place, then my noni rented it out just for the income as well. And she stayed in the house until everybody told her she had to leave.
Tim, what was the kind of like final straw that said, we're going to do this, we're into this?
So I think the final straw was when we saw the front house go up, and because there was a gas explosion and I guess a fire, and that's what took out the front house. And then there was a couple other houses that were taken out too at the same time. I think that was like in the 90s, early 90s. So then we were living in St. Louis, and we drive by here because it's always on the way home, no matter where we lived. We lived in Lake St. Louis, and this was still on the way home.
Now, could you guys describe kind of where we're standing right now, and was this here 2 years ago, what we're standing on?
No, this was not here, and we're standing on a front porch that surrounds the house, and it was just the bare stone wall shell.
So the foundation was the only thing here. There was no wood, there was no floors, no ceiling, no windows, nothing to do with wood was here. The only thing that was still here was the anchor of the limestone rocks, and then some of the mortar, which was lime and sand. The Mississippi sand, because that gave it you can't use Merrimack sand, you got to use Mississippi sand, because that's with probably like 2-3 tenths of a mile from here, we could walk there. So that's probably where they got it originally from, the sand and the lime, wherever.
The research that our organization did went back into land records when they did the initial survey of stone houses in Carondelet, indicated that the land was sold by the city of Carondelet to a man named Maeder, M-A-E-D-E-R, who was a city official and the operator of a newspaper down here in Carondelet. It was sold to him in 1851, and for lack of a better term, he flipped it. He bought it at a low price and then flipped it to a guy named John Borer the same year. And the Borer family is recorded as living on this piece of property for another 20 years after that. So, yeah, I mean, 1854, circa 1851, something like that is a pretty solid guess. And it's probably the best guess we'll ever get because there were no building permits at that time or even street addresses for that matter.
Tim, I know there was something you wanted to mention about the outside of the house.
One thing is the lintels. They're stone, hand-carved stone, and they're huge. And they're over the door and the windows, and there's two windows below us also. But that's just not seen anywhere in St. Louis at all that I've seen. Or many other places, so I don't know. That's really special for this building, I think.
Yeah, they are really unique. They're giant, essentially unfinished slabs. The base of the slab lintel has been squared off, but they just used the rest of the stone the way it was and fit them in.
Now, a quick question about construction of these houses originally. Unlike most stone houses that you might see, you know, in the Central West End, other places like that where the stone is cut so it fits together, these are all different shapes and sizes. Were they just kind of winging it from the ground up, or what was the technique used?
It's limestone laid on limestone. So it's stone laid on stone, and then you put the lime and sand in between it to give it the... But it's not haphazardly laid, because I did some of it with our mason, and it's not easy to do and to get the right levels. You can look at how straight everything is and how straight these lintels and how sharp the corners are. It's just truly amazing what they had back then, and they did what they did.
It's a giant jigsaw puzzle, and they made the pieces as they went along. So they had a huge, you know, quantity of stone delivered, and they worked with each piece with chisels and hammers to fit them all together. And this is a stone-bearing wall construction. Houses you reference in the Central West End or any really anywhere else in the city that appear to be stone, that's a stone veneer over a brick structure. This is actually a stone building. Every component of this wall system is limestone quarried, you know, probably within a mile of here.
All right, let's head inside. I'll follow you guys.
So the door was built by a local craftsman, furniture maker, David Moore Fine Furniture Builds, right down on South Broadway. And he also did the windows also, which we are the window panes and the sashes are from the Civil War also. So we got that and bought those and put those in.
How much, when you were starting out, how much did you guys know about preservation work? Is this
absolutely nothing? We've done houses before, but not anything like this.
We hadn't really done any houses before. We lived in a house that over 20 years that we fixed up gradually and made other houses our own, but nothing this major. I mean, this was purely, you know, an act of the heart, because we weren't prepared for it at all. You know, we just wanted to get it before it was demolished or you know, somebody else got it and did something with it. So
when you walk into this room now, does it feel like the place you grew up?
Yes, it always has. When I walk on the property, it does. You know, I can still envision the stone house in the front, and I can still see how this was set up with my aunts and uncles living here. So yes, it does. It still feels like the house.
Can you tell me a little bit about what we're looking at inside?
Well, it's just a basic square room with the stone walls and wood ceiling and the frame windows. And the kitchen was over here on this side, and the sleeping area was over there. And that's basically all the house offered.
That's Marcia Dorsey, who, along with her husband Tim, rehabilitated Marcia's childhood home in the Patch neighborhood of Carondelet. We're standing on the first floor of the one-room house, where the smell of freshly hewn wood from the rafters pervades. Marcia shares who might have originally lived in the house in the 1850s.
From the size of the land and the buildings and compared to what was around the house at the time, I would say they were people of means, because it was larger than any of the other houses on this block especially. And then the rest of Broadway was pretty much retail. So, you know, I have no idea what was across the street before the foundry came there. That was there when I was a child as well.
And the other thing I was going to point out inside here, it did have windows that they put in at a later date, so we actually did fill it in. So that's what you're seeing here, and then here too, is that we put it back to the original state that we thought it was and the way we thought it looked like. And then over here, you can kind of see where we left a lot of the stones and mortar. Well, it's not mortar, but it's lime and sand. But we left it at the original state, and then there's some plaster also on it. So we left that so you could see what it looked like before.
I can't help but notice on the property and in this room in particular, you know, there's angels looking over us. Was there any special reason for that?
Well, my grandmother, being an immigrant from Italy, she believed in angels. And I really do. I believe that angels watched over this, because it was a total shell. And I mean, with everything else being demolished around it, it's amazing that it still stood.
I noticed as we were talking, the air conditioning kicked on.
Right.
Was that part of the process as well?
Yes. And then just getting the basement dug out, because the basement was almost as high as the front door was, so we dug the basement out, and then you could see the fireplace down in the basement, and so we dug the whole fireplace out and re-put it in. So probably won't be part of the art gallery, but because it's not easy accessible, but it's really unique to this house, or just beautiful, actually, I think.
Wait, now tell me about these plans for an art gallery, did you say?
Yeah, that was the plan all along, because I feel like artists have a tendency to bring areas back. And this area can use some bringing back. So hopefully, if we, and the building is a work of art itself, so it just, that's what it needs to be.
Well, let's head downstairs and see this basement. For people at home, you should know that there is, you know, what looks to be a hidden entrance in the corner of the house.
Okay, here we go.
This is not for the faint of heart, folks. So I think one of the things that's different about this basement than when most people might think of a basement is that there's plenty of light down here. There's windows.
I have a theory about that. And there are other homes in this area. There's one right around the corner on Riley that essentially has the exact same form as this home, except the level that we're on right now is the ground surface, and the what serves as the first floor here is actually accessed by a staircase. And in about 1860, Carondelet embarked on a period of massive road grading. They were grading down the bluffs to make the incline less steep. There are actually stories about the horse-drawn omnibuses in the middle of the 19th century making people get out of the wagons, and everybody that was riding on the omnibus had to push the wagon up the side of the hill, and then they could get back on it and go on their merry way. So the bluffs were incredibly steep down here, and the city of Carondelet went on this effort to grade those down so they were more accessible, and a lot of the fill was dumped over east of Broadway to level out, initially to help level out railroad track alignments and fill in sinkholes and other, you know, irregularities over here. And so I think it's possible that, you know, this home is built in the 1850s. It could have been half sort of buried by this redeposition of fill from the bluffs on the west side of Broadway in the middle of the 19th century, and what had originally been the ground surface became a subterranean area.
Let's head back upstairs.
Okay.
How many other houses like this are in the area?
I don't remember the ultimate count. There, like I said, there is a survey from the late 70s that recorded buildings primarily east of Broadway down here, stone buildings. And there was something like, you know, 13 or something, 14, 15 at that time. Unfortunately, since then we've lost some of them. And I think we've discovered a few more. So it would be an interesting project, something that, you know, we'll get around to eventually, to do a resurvey these properties. Some of these stone houses are hiding in plain sight. They've got some kind of more contemporary cladding over them, and you can tell from the form of the building that it very well might be an old house, and in this area, a very old house has a good chance of being stone. So, you know, ultimately, we don't know how many stone homes we have left in St. Louis, but I would certainly say under 50 and probably under 25.
Is there any other, like, is there, if someone finds one of these and they want to, you know, take ownership of it or save it in some way, like, what recourse do they have?
Well, they just need to cobble together the funds to purchase it. Sorry for the pun with the cobbling. There are stone homes. There's a beautiful little row of two of them right nearby here on Vulcan that were built by the Zeiss family, Z-E-I-S-S. And those have been vacant for many years, and they're incredible and probably contemporary with this home, and could really use somebody to come along and see the value in them. Fortunately, we've learned something from this project, and that is the knowledge that they stick around for a really, really long time and can really take a beating before they disappear. But eventually, they do need someone to use them, reuse them, and put them back together. Fortunately, most of the stone homes still surviving in St. Louis are occupied and are in good shape. But there are certainly still some that need some care and need a new life.
Now, could you tell us a little bit, the most enhanced awards are coming up by the Landmarks Association. Can you tell us a little bit, you know, about, like, what other kind of properties are featured in those awards?
Well, I'm not going to spill the beans on that. It's a surprise every year, but for 21 years we've been giving out these awards to recognize all the hard work that crazy people like the Dorseys do to put these incredible buildings back together. And, you know, they did this for very personal reasons, but they did this for all of St. Louis, to be honest, because this building is an important part of Marsh's family's history, but this is an important part of our community's history. So this is a public service, and in St. Louis we like to focus on the negative stories. I mean, open the newspaper, turn on the news, and it's frequently bad news rather than good, but you know, when it comes to preservation and revitalization of our historic neighborhoods, there's this constant activity, this hum of activity that it has a tendency to sort of fly below the radar. But every day, people are putting back together our beautiful historic buildings and neighborhoods. And this award ceremony is a chance to recognize all that great work.
If I could ask you guys, just, you know, now that you're kind of you're at the end of this first process, you know, for other people who are looking to get into preservation work, like, what would be your first tips, your tricks?
Your heart has to be in a project like this. I mean, it because there's so many things that go against you. There's so many unexpected,
like the wall coming down in the back.
You know, issues and cost that if the heart isn't there, it's just not. You know, I think it'd be easy to give up on it. Yeah. But our hearts were in it, so that's what we did.
And it was a lot of fun and interesting. We learned a lot, right?
Right.
What does it feel like to drive by here now?
Oh, it feels wonderful.
Awesome, yeah.
It really is. I mean, I still almost cry every time I come
by. You have to go by that night also, because the lights just light it up, and it's just beautiful. It's just glowing, because the lights light the rock up, and it just... unbelievable, pretty, beautiful, inspiring. And that's why we want it to be an art gallery, because it inspires you.
Well, and I can always feel my Noni here. I could before when it was a shell, way before we had it. And I, you know, now I can too.
That was Marcia and Tim Dorsey, as well as Andrew Weil. Last week, they showed off Marcia's rehabilitated childhood home in Carondelet. The home, located at 124 East Stein Street, is receiving a Most Enhanced Building Award from the Landmarks Association of St. Louis. You may recognize the last name Dorsey. Tim and Marcia are the parents of Twitter founder and St. Louis native Jack Dorsey. And yes, the house does have its own Twitter account. Check out @MiaNonisCasa on Twitter, where you can view photos and insights from the entire restoration process.
That's producer Kelly Moffitt and her profile on one of the Landmarks Association of St. Louis's 2017 Most Enhanced Award winners.